Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers episode for Wednesday, March 7th. I'm Chris Manning, the site manager at Fear the Sword, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog, where we cover the Cavs from all angles every day. Everything you want about the Cavs, we have it. Today's show is a re-up on Cavs Nuggets. The Cavs start their West Coast road trip today in Denver against the Nuggets, and a team they just played on Saturday and lost to. So joining me to break down that game is Adam Matas. He's the host of Locked On Nuggets, as well as the site manager at Denver Stiff's SB Nation's Nuggets blog. He also has written for places such as Vice Sports. Adam is a wealth of basketball knowledge. You will find what he has to say about Denver and how these two teams matched up. Very insightful. Hope you guys enjoy the show. And on another note, no other Cavs news to report today, but I want to just call attention to Kevin Love and what he posted in the Players' Tribune. Kevin Love posted an essay in the Players' Tribune about his issues with anxiety, his issues dealing with the stigma of mental health. It's called Everyone is Going Through Something. You can find the link to it below in the show notes and linked. If you're reading this on Fear the Sword, you'll find a write-up on it there. But Kevin Love spoke about having a panic attack in November in a game against the Atlanta Hawks. ESPN later reported that he then had another one in January, the day they played the Thunder, a.k.a. the game he left sick and was later accused of faking being sick, and there was a lot of confusion about where he was that game, why he left the arena, etc., etc. Kevin was hospitalized for that first panic attack, and he's now seeing a therapist. He has received support from LeBron James, support from a lot of people out there. He follows DeMar DeRozan from the Toronto Raptors, who spoke about this. Kevin Love, I think there's a lot of credit for stepping up and speaking about this. Mental health is a really, really important issue. It's something we do not talk about enough. I am someone who deals with anxiety. I can relate exactly to Kevin Love because I had the same type of panic attacks. I've had four or five of them in my life. They are the scariest thing I've ever dealt with personally. And I think everyone should read what he wrote, read what he has to say, and I'm looking forward to getting the chance to ask him questions about this when he, you know, eventually is back in town and he does meet again. But please read that, think about what he has to say, and just know that maybe someone in your life could use your help, and they're going through this too. But if you want some just basketball, here's myself, Adam Matas, from Locked On Nuggets and Denver Stiffs, talking about Cavs Nuggets and what you might see Wednesday night in Denver. We'll be back tomorrow with a show recapping Cavs Nuggets and back the rest of the week as we cover the rest of this road trip and everything going on with the Cavs. Go on iTunes if you want to support the podcast. A 5-star rating and review is the best way to support this podcast, so please go and do that. And if you have any mailbag questions, comments, concerns, feedback, lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Tweet me at CDBimRates or tweet the pod at lockedoncavs. Thanks for everyone's support. Thanks for listening, and have a great Wednesday.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
Or am I? I'm supposed to be Adam Matas from Locked On Nuggets.
We're here to talk about Cavs Nuggets round two. They just played this past weekend where the Cavs lost to Denver 126-117. In that game, the Nuggets posted an absurd offensive rating of 135.5. Shot over 50% from three. Gary Harris was, the best player on the floor, in my mind, for most of this game. 32 points. Did some really nice things against LeBron defensively. Adam, before we get into the context of the rematch, where both teams are going to stand coming into it, what did you take away from that Saturday matchup in Cleveland?
The Nuggets shot well on the road, which is something they haven't done a whole lot. You mentioned the offensive rating was absurd. The Nuggets have had that really for the last month and a half, they've found their identity that they cultivated last year, where they were the number one offense for 4 months. They've kind of rediscovered that, mostly at home, but really over the last 6 weeks, it's been everywhere. But it was nice to see them shoot so well. I think over 50% from the 3-point line. Yeah, 19 to 35 from the 3-point line on the road, which is obviously a hot streak, but it's something Denver's done kind of a lot lately at home. It was nice to see them do it on the road.
They in this game, some of it is the Cavs are just bad defensively, but if you look at how Gary Harris got his shot, if he had that big three late, you know, Jamal Murray had some really, really nice moments in this game. And Will Barton also just kind of got hot in different spots. This wasn't the Nikola Jokic show. I mean, he had 9 points and 8 assists and 7 boards, so a very good all-around game. But it was interesting for me to think about how the Cavs are going to have to deal with that guy and how good he is and deal with the returning Paul Millsap. And then it ended up just being Gary Harris just destroy them. Jamal Murray destroyed them.
Yeah.
And Will Barton came off the bench and hit 4 threes in that, adding up with the Wilson Chandler 7-10 night. That all that just doomed the Cavs.
I think, though, these things are connected. And you're right, Gary Harris hit some huge shots in both halves. Will Barton also, I thought, had a really great game, 23-8-7 for Barton. But I think a lot of it is teams, you know, some nights Jokic puts up the absurd stat lines, and some nights he puts up the stat line like that night's 9-7-8. But everything still kind of played through him. And I think for Nuggets fans, they were worried with the reintegration of Paul Millsap, would they still be able to play through Nikola Jokic every time down court? And I thought in this game, it wasn't as nice as we've seen in the month of February, where Jokic was averaging a triple-double, but it was close enough. And I thought that bringing your bigs out to the top of the key allowed for a lot of dribble penetration, backdoor cuts, and all that stuff. And the Nuggets had that rolling. Whenever they get that going, the rest of the offense seems to slide into play. So for Nuggets fans' perspective, and I know Cavs fans are going to beat themselves up because gave up 126 points and, oh, the defense, you know, people worried about that. The Nuggets have scored over 100 for like 17 straight games. So the last time they didn't score over 100 was way back on January 27th in a game they won. And then before that, it was like another 15 straight games. So the Nuggets score, they put up points on everybody. It's just a matter of if they can get enough stops. And at least in this game, in the fourth quarter, for like a 3-minute stretch, they were able to get enough stops.
This game also made me realize I would give Gary Harris would be great on the Cavs, and they'll never get him, but I would have been very happy if they would have gotten, you know, him in the Kyrie trade this summer. And I just watching Will Barton, my God, he would help them so much more than Jordan Clarkson. Just the decision making, the defensive effort, where he isn't just looking at the hoop. He's not a black hole. That was just something. The ball movement, when it was even just not Jokic, who had some really nice passes, but it wasn't maybe the Vine or the YouTube clips that you see of him just throwing these ridiculous passes.
Well, I want to get to that. I want to take that point because Cavs fans laughed at me this summer when I would not have traded Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. I thought that was an overpay for Kyrie Irving.
And we listeners of our podcast, long-time listeners, will know that you and I talked about this, and we kind of negotiated a fake trade around Kyrie.
What was it? Do you remember?
I think it was Harris. I want to say my baseline probably was Harris, Barton, and like a pick, and I think probably you had Kenneth Faried's salary in there. I would be my guess at kind of what the structure basically was.
I maintain that would have been an A-plus home run trade for Cleveland, and I know it's kind of worked out because they were able to turn their other trade into another trade, and maybe they're better off now. But like you mentioned, Gary Harris is the most reliable shooting guard in the NBA. He's not the best. He's not going to go out and like win, take over games for you. But if you think about LeBron, he's that guy. He just has to know that when he kicks out to guys, are they going to knock it down? Gary Harris knocks down the shot that he's supposed to. And it's like, you know, Pete Kyle Korver in that regard, in that if he's open on the wing as LeBron drives and kicks it out to him, he's making it. Will Barton's a guy that is also a really efficient catch and shoot 3-point shooter, really good 3-point shooter overall. The difference with him is he can create a little bit more, so he would probably play a lot of minutes when LeBron is on the bench. I think both of those guys fit so well onto what the Cavs were doing, and I was mocked by Cavs fans for even proposing that type of trade over the summer.
I mean, I think you're kind of correct, especially considering how Isaiah looked. And I think even though if you just think about what they got, really they basically just have the Nets pick from. You know,
and that being said, Hill and Hood, I really like those guys. So it might have worked out for you guys in the long run anyway, because that trade ended up working out. But But in terms of like Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas, no, I would have much rather had Kerry Harris and Will Barton. And even Fareed, you know, he's not in the Nuggets rotation right now, but he's a guy that has value if you have a superstar talent like LeBron. LeBron takes care of all sorts of things. You just need guys that can do one thing well. And Fareed is an elite offensive rebounder and elite roll to the rim guy. It's all he needed to do for the Cavs. I think it would have worked.
I mean, I'd rather him playing Jeff Green's minutes than Jeff Green.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
exactly.
Like in a vacuum, yep. give me Fareed. Looking at this from the Cavs perspective, I don't know how you kind of view this, but I think some of this went really well. George Hill had a good shooting night. He's been missing that. Jetty Osman had a kind of surprising offensive night. LeBron had not a typical LeBron night. He still had 15 assists and 25 points and 9 boards and 10 boards. He had a triple-double. Weird to say that wasn't up to his standard, but he was bad defensively. J.R. Smith had that crazy second half, and yet they still couldn't win. I don't know how you feel about their defensive issues, but I think some of it is they're a little better, but I think some of it is just this team. You can tell that the vibe of a new group coming together, like it did in Boston, did in OKC, it's not there, and it just looks bad. And I think like they were better when Nance was on the floor. Tristan did okay, but you can tell this is a group that's still very much gelling. And a team like the Nuggets that works so precisely, that moves the ball so well, it just seems like that's the exact type of team that can make the Cavs look really, really silly.
And again, the Nuggets do this to everyone. They did it to the Warriors, the Spurs. I mean, all the elite defenses the Nuggets have kind of made look silly. So I really do think Denver's just that good offensively, that bad defensively. But the one thing I'll say is I thought LeBron had a really good game other than the fourth quarter. And the fourth quarter was interesting because I'm probably reading too much into this, but I really felt like LeBron was more focused about figuring things out with this team than he was winning. And a couple plays really stand out to me. One, he gets Jokic switched out to him on the perimeter, which is as big of a mismatch as you were going to get. LeBron isolated on an island with Jokic, just blow by him and dunk it. And instead he passed to George Hill in the corner. And there was just a bunch of plays like that where it's like, okay, LeBron has an advantage here. And he got the ball into one of the new guys' hands, Rodney Hood, George Hill, Larry Nance. And it felt to me a little bit more like him trying to figure those guys out and also trying to like bolster their confidence and show, you know, hey, we need you guys and just show some faith. They're not going to get a 1 or 2 seed. They're probably not going to fall below like a 5 seed. I don't know that how much stock LeBron has and where their seating is going to be, and it looked to me like he was more just using this as a practice than he was trying to win.
I don't think you're wrong about that. I think you've had a lot of LeBron getting used to new guys. It is a completely different roster, and the rotations have been very different. You know, you're seeing smaller lineups where Hill and Clarkson are playing together. That was something the Cavs were not doing before. They barely even did it when they had Kyrie and Dele. And Dele could really functionally be a 2. You know, Kyle Korver didn't play at all in the second half. Only seven minutes for him. You know, Hood played a lot, and he had guys play long stretches. Nance played most of the second half, and maybe that was because of the Tristan Thompson ankle injury that we learned about. But I think he also just played really well and had that incredible dunk, and he just gives them some bounciness that I think they sort of need. But I think you're right about LeBron. He is trying to figure out all these new guys, and it shifts. And I think they're a team very much that does not have a flow. Like I think it's very possible that the group you see right now will have some success, could end up having a good season, maybe make the finals. I don't know how exactly confident I feel about that, but I think it'd be crazy to say a LeBron team's not going to get there. But yeah, I think it's possible that, like, let's say they bring back most of this team for next year and make some kind of improvement, whether that's using salary in the Nets pick or bringing in that rookie. They do something that changes the core, and LeBron resigns, obviously. It's very possible that they will not feel the full synergy, and probably likely that they won't feel that full synergy, that full cohesiveness as a group until next year. And that's, I mean, that limits their ceiling now, but I think it's fully possible that a game like this just is natural for the team, and the personnel isn't exactly like loaded with Andre Roberson types. Like
you don't have a ton of defenders.
It's not great.
And you look at the Heat team that LeBron was on, it really took them a season and a half to figure out their identity. Actually, like a season and all the way into the playoffs of that second year before they really figured out their identity for the next several years. I thought Cleveland was kind of the same way when he came back. It took a little bit of time for everything to gel. And you look at what they're trying to do. They're trying to make a completely new roster gel in 2 months. I think LeBron is aware of the task at hand. And that's why I thought this game was so interesting from him, because I really do think he could have won this game. If he would have just shot like dominated the ball the last 4 minutes of the game and gone to the, he could have gotten to the free throw line and all that stuff. And instead he was kind of giving the ball into other people's hands to kind of see what they got. I think he just realizes if they're going to be worth anything, I don't think he cares about making the second round or the third round. I think he's like, we can either make it to the finals or we won't. And I think he's using this as a crash course for this team. So, I think for Cavs fans, it'll probably make for a frustrating next 6 weeks of basketball because the team won't, I don't think will look like they will in the playoffs until they get to the playoffs. But it's also probably the best chance that they have is using this regular season as an experiment more. I think that's your best shot of reaching as much of your potential as you can.
So we look at this from flip back to the Nuggets side of this. Where do they stand right now? We're coming into the rematch. It's at home. They're going to get that altitude advantage. The Cavs are in the first game of a long road trip. They're going to be a little bit thin. What is this game, and what would another win mean for Denver?
Oh, it's huge. Denver has to win every game. The Western Conference is so nuts, and you know Denver is like 7-3 in their last 10, and has actually fallen in the standings. So you really have to go like 8-10 every 10 game block for the rest of the season for Denver. So it being a home game against a team they just beat on the road, I think you look at that as a game that they really, really need. I think there's a sense of urgency there. It is the second night of a back-to-back, just like it was the last, you know, on Saturday. It's the second night of a back-to-back again for Denver. They're in Dallas on Tuesday night and then back home against Cleveland on Wednesday. So they'll be tired. They'll be a little bit road weary because that'll be their return home after a road trip. So I think this is another schedule alert game for Denver that you could probably subtract like 4 or 5 points from them just for it being that. But nonetheless, the team is locked in. They are pretty deep, so they do have an opportunity to play, you know, 10 guys and maybe stretch things out a little bit. But it's an absolute must win. And from Denver's perspective, they're on a 2-game winning streak right now. They've got Dallas who's trying to lose, so you expect a 3-game winning streak. And then after Cleveland, they've got the Lakers at home and Sacramento at home. So this is an opportunity for Denver, from Denver's perspective, to have a 6-game winning streak, which would mean so much right now, as opposed to losing one in the middle that I think takes all of the steam out of their sails. So for Denver, I think it's actually a pretty important game.
I think that game on Saturday, I know we talked right before we recorded that you weren't sure how big of a win it was. I got the vibe from hearing Malone talk and some of the guys talking about that game. They were in very good spirits after the game. This is a group that seems to really, I mean, it just going in there and winning and kind of handling the Cavs in a lot of ways, I think had to feel good. And for Gary Harris in particular, this is a guy that he defended some LeBron elbow touches as well as I've seen anybody do it all year. He had 32 points. He hit this big three that was the dagger after the Cavs made this big comeback. They're down by like as many as 15. And Gary Harris is really the one that, in addition to Wilson Chandler, who had the last dunk that kind of sealed it, Gary Harris is sort of the reason this game got out of hand. I think just doing that has to have some positive residuals for this group. I mean, when you look at the rest of their season, though, how do you feel about where the Nuggets are? Like, what is your outlook on where this team is headed starting from now until we get to the end?
It's such a question mark, because you're right. I think the thing the Nuggets were excited about was the night before in Memphis, they win by 6 points, but it really came down to the last minute, which it never should have. Memphis is like a G League team right now with
so bad.
Just so bad.
Like the tank. I don't know if they're my like favorite of the tanking teams, but it is. I couldn't name some of the guys when I've watched. I'm just like, I have no idea who you are.
There's a reason they've lost 13 games in a row. So they're terrible, but Denver barely beat them. And I think Denver, they had just reinserted Paul Millsap into the starting lineup against Memphis, and the offense looked really, really terrible. So I think there was this nervousness of, you know, when they were playing through Jokic, everything was going so great for a month and a half. And then as soon as you put Millsap in, you barely beat the Memphis Grizzlies. So I think what happened in Cleveland was, okay, the offense looked back to what we expected. It was only that Memphis game became a blip rather than the start of a new trend. And I think there was relief amongst the Nuggets that okay, we can kind of reintegrate Paul Millsap and maintain the offense. So I think that's really what people were feeling. And it was a big win. I mean, Denver was underdogs in that game. But again, how much of an underdog? Sometimes it feels like second night of a back-to-back against LeBron. Okay, there's no chance. I think Denver was underdogs, but they probably shouldn't have been that much of an underdog, because I just think Cleveland is in a weird spot right now.
very much in a weird spot. We'll get back to the Cavs, but how has Millsap looked since he's come back?
Defensively, he's incredible. He's a guy I enjoy watching him on the defensive end because he's just such a locked in guy. You know, NBA guys, all NBA guys, even your best defenders just sometimes seem to fall asleep, you know, defensively over the course of 48 minutes. Millsap is, he's kind of always in a defensive stance when he's in help side and the ball's on the other side, rather than taking a breather. He's like, he's doing your old school, like pointing the fingers, you know, down in his stance, ready to pounce at any moment. So he's kind of fun to watch just because of how intense he is on the defensive end at all times. And Denver needs that. Denver doesn't have any other good defenders, quite frankly. Mason Plumlee is like their second best defender. And I don't remember him before coming to Denver. I don't remember him being talked about as a defensive presence. So they need Millsap to be this like all NBA defender type guy. And he's been that. Offensively is the trick, because in my opinion, I always say Nikola Jokic is like Steve Nash. When he's on the court, you just play through him, because he is better. If you play through him, your team is going to be better offensively, even if you have great other offensive talents on the roster. You play this style, you're going to get open looks. And Paul Millsap's a really good player. He could shoot, he can drive, he can post up. But the Nuggets just don't need some of that. They need him to knock down shots and to be a screener. And, you know, he does unlock some wrinkles. But for the most part, he needs to be a cog in the Nikola Jokic offensive engine. And that's kind of a tough ask for a player of his ilk. It hasn't been as pretty. He's been back for 3 games now. It hasn't been as pretty as you hope. But I do think it's trending in the right direction. And I think Paul Millsap is a very willing star. I think he kind of knows he just wants to fit in, and he doesn't need to use up all of his talents on offense because those bases are covered elsewhere.
They, to me, are, you think you're right about Jokic, but they just, the way they move the ball is just, every time I watch teams that do that, it's very jarring for me because the Cavs just don't do that. And if you watch them play right now, what you're talking about earlier with the calculus LeBron has, you can tell that they're thinking through their sets. And Ty Lue's talked about dumbing stuff down a little bit, pulling some sets back from what they were doing just to simplify things. And I think that makes sense. I also think that leans into some of the tendencies and guys like Clarkson that I don't particularly love, that it's just going to maybe force them to become gunners. And I don't love that. That and him and JR getting hot is a really tough thing to bet on as your secondary guy. Let's do this. You look at this Cavs team. The rest of the season, George Hill has described them as Robin's to LeBron's Batman. Is it weird that the Cavs don't have someone who's like more than a Robin, right? Like that can be like not like a co-Batman, but like right up there with him to actually, I mean, like, is that an adjustment in itself? And that assumes that they're not going to ask Kevin Love to do that because they've just never really trusted him to do that for reasons I'm not totally sure about.
Well, I think you need a guy when LeBron goes to the bench, because I, like you mentioned, I don't think this roster is a roster that it's like, okay, LeBron's to the bench, let's play team ball and you know, let's move the ball. I don't think they have that roster. So it is nice around
Jordan
LeBron.
Clarkson's the black hole. That's just like basically like when he's the backup point guard, he's going to shoot every time he touches the ball. I'm just convinced.
He's one of my least favorite players that's like actually talented, but I don't like him at all for that reason. He's not good enough to be the number one option, you know, on any lineup, even if it's your bench lineup or whatever. I don't think he's good enough for that. But that's his really only role, in my opinion. So I do think, though, I've always thought LeBron teams are best when you just give him a bunch of like role playing elite shooters and guys that are just willing to let LeBron be LeBron. It's kind of like with James Harden. It's nice having Chris Paul as that sidekick, and this is, I think, the point you're kind of getting to, is do you need that second guy that can make plays whenever LeBron can take a play off or whatever? And I do think that the Cavs are going to be missing that guy. But I think for the most part, putting this much shooting around LeBron actually helps the offense, and I think ultimately it's going to make them a really good offensive team. But when you talk about fourth quarter in the clutch, I think teams key in on LeBron. And I'm not sure that the Cavs are going to be able to make teams, you know, make teams stay honest whenever they try to really game plan for just LeBron. Whereas last couple seasons, he's had Kyrie to be able to be like, you can't double team me because that means Kyrie's going 4-on-3 and he'll kill you guys.
Yeah, I think they miss someone like Kyrie. And Clarkson's not that, JR's not that. Kevin Love, I think, could be that, but you would force the second unit to become more of a ball-moving unit, and I think that would be interesting, but I would have to see them commit to it. This road trip for them, I think, is going to be very interesting. It starts off in Denver. They play two games in LA. They play Denver. They play Phoenix. And they play Portland. And they, on the way back home, they play in Chicago. So they have a mix of tanking teams, but also a mix of teams that are all over the playoff spectrum. You have the Clippers that are fighting for a playoff spot. The Nuggets, as you've talked about, are fighting for a playoff spot and fighting for positioning in their way. And then you have Phoenix and Chicago that are tanking, and the Lakers who are tanking. And it seems like a good mix of what they're going to be. And I don't know how you'd feel about this, but it seems to me like if you're going to have to do this trip late in the season, you probably learn something about this team throughout it. And you get the high altitude, you get to play in Portland, you get to deal with the spectacle of LA, deal with a weekend in LA.
LeBron. Geez, yeah.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, probably leave Monday morning out of LA based on when the Lakers
game is. See, Denver needs you guys to beat the Clippers. So whatever happens, you need to be focused for that one.
the Friday night in LA game. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just arrived. Yeah. I mean, maybe their hangers will come after. I'll go do some yoga with Lonzo after that. But I think it's going to be a really interesting road trip. I mean, do you feel like a team that's going into a situation like this that has all these new guys that is still missing Kevin Love, won't have Tristan Thompson? I think that do you feel like that is bound to reveal something about what they have over the course of a little less than 2 week road trip?
It'd be a lot nicer if this was done in reverse order and you have Phoenix and Chicago right off the bat, because Denver just had this with Memphis and now Dallas tonight. You reinsert Paul Millsap into the starting lineup in a very low pressure situation. These teams are trying to lose, so you could almost treat it as a scrimmage. For the Cavs, at the end of this, I think it's nice because Phoenix becomes basically a practice game, Chicago a practice game, and those will be kind of nice for the team to experiment and get to know each other. But the rest of those games, as you mentioned, are really tough. Denver's going to be really tough, even though it's a second night of back-to-back. The Clippers just keep beating people. I don't know. I don't think the Clippers are actually good, but they keep winning. The Lakers actually are good all of a sudden, and that's not going to be an easy game. And then, of course, at Portland, one of the toughest places to play towards the end of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if the team went 3-3 or 2-4 over that stretch, but at least the end of it, especially if Kevin Love comes back at some point of that, it could be a nice scrimmage-type environment for the team to start to get their footing for that final month of the season.
Wrap it up on this. Notes about the Cavs. We're recording this on Monday, so it's a little before the Nuggets play a game and the Cavs play the Pistons. So some things could change here, but for the Cavs, no Tristan Thompson in all likelihood. We don't know exactly how they're going to replace those minutes, but Ante Zizic has been discussed. They're certainly going to play small. Jeff Green maybe could return for Denver, but that's still TBD. He did skate with LeBron at the Cavs skating party on Sunday during the Oscars, so at least he can skate, and he had a pair of Jordan
skates. Wait, roller skating?
They rented out like a skating rink.
How nervous are you for the skating party every year? Skating is dangerous.
Look, they've gone
especially
bowling
for 7-foot people.
Yeah, I mean, like, keep Larry Nance healthy, basically. Keep Kevin Love away. I guess LeBron can do it, but everyone seemed to go. Even invited the two-way players based on their Instagram stories. So, like, that's what the Cavs are doing right now.
Well, nice.
It dates back to David Blatt taking them bowling, so.
I think that Larry Nance minutes with LeBron are going to be very, very productive. Tristan Thompson, also productive guy with LeBron, but I think Larry Nance is that piece that fits with LeBron. Like, the LeBron-Larry Nance pick and roll is going to open up so many things for the Cavs once they really start to figure it out. So, again, I don't think it's a blessing in disguise, because I do think the team will probably drop some games that they would win if they were at full health. But you might discover something that comes invaluable in a month, and I think LeBron-Larry Nance Jr. pick and rolls is going to be one of those things.
I'll ask you this. Is Nance, and are you more intrigued by Nance and Love in some capacity, or Tristan maybe as the bully ball five next to LeBron at the four?
I mean, I'm intrigued by Larry Nance and Kevin Love. I am intrigued by that, because you can really space the floor. LeBron, J.R. Smith, George Hill, Kevin Love, and Larry Nance Jr. You can rebound with that lineup. I don't think you can defend with that lineup, but you can rebound with it, which rebounding is such an underrated part of defense. You can really suck on defense, but if you limit every team to one shot every time down court, you could at least be somewhat adequate. But offensively, that's going to be such a hard one to stop. George Hill's going to make an open shot. J.R. Smith will make an open shot. Kevin Love will make an open shot. And we know from experience, if you have an above-the-rim player, you can't stop LeBron pick and roll. So So I think that'll be a really, really good offensive lineup that can murder teams in medium-sized doses, 4 or 5 minute stretches. And they might discover that over the next 2 weeks or week and a half or whatever it is. And that'll be a chip in their back pocket.
I expect Nance to be the starting center by the end of this road trip, just proxy to Tristan's injury, but I think it's going to happen. The Nuggets come in playing the Mavericks on Tuesday, a tanking Mavericks team. Is there any notes about the Nuggets that people, just as they look at this Cavs-Nuggets game on Wednesday, that you think they should keep in mind as they think about it and preview it?
Just that Denver really likes to push the pace at home, not in a pace in terms of possessions, but what they do is even after makes, they get the ball over the half court as quickly as any team in the NBA. This is a Spurs thing, right? The Spurs are really good at this. Take the ball out of the net, cross it in half court in the first 2 or 3 seconds. Denver's good at that as well. And so you're talking about a Cavs team that's starting a long road trip. I don't think any team wants to start a road trip in Denver because playing at altitude is kind of like playing two games. And Denver, especially with the way they play, I think is going to wear Cleveland out. Win or lose, it's going to be a very taxing game for them. And then on top of that, Denver tends to shoot really, really well at home. So it'll be, if they looked good on the road this last one, I would expect similar offensive production in that one just because they shoot so well at home.
Yeah, that's... I'm looking forward to that because I want to see how the Cavs handle that pace and at the altitude, and because some of the stuff that they did that didn't necessarily work against the Nuggets on Saturday in Cleveland was effort-based LeBron just taking weird angles and not closing out on guys. If they avoid some of that would go a long way, and I think last year the Cavs had a really bad performance in Denver, so it wouldn't shock me if they had another really bad performance at altitude. Adam, it was a pleasure.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Find me on Twitter at CDimmonWrites, and you can find Adam on Twitter at
Adam_Matez.
And check out Adam on Fridays on Locked On NBA as well with Anthony Irwin, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
I got stuck with him somehow.
Yeah, I mean, how did you get stuck with the Lakers fan? Like, goodness. No one deserves
I told
that.
Him no Lakers talk on the pod. That was my one stipulation, so we avoid that mess.
Well, he's got the Patrick meme about Kawhi out now, so we're all in trouble. But this has been a Locked On Cavs, Locked On Nuggets crossover, as well as a Fear the Sword and Denver Stiffs crossover. Hope you guys enjoy the game, and we'll both talk to you again very soon.